I am 38, the 29th of April, 1991, to the 28th of April, 1992. Above, unpublished diary entry by Bill Drummond, dated the 13th of February, 1992, by Joseph Witt. The following is excerpted from a previously unpublished diary entry by Bill Drummond, dated February the 13th, 1992. More people despise me than I will ever be able to look in the eye and know. Relatedly, perhaps, I now dream exclusively in smells that I don't remember. And that's all I remember upon waking each morning, dry-throated. Knowledge that my aquiline, amnesiac, astral nose knows nothing. I must be yelling, throwing my voice out in dreams, or mouth-breathing to deny some back catalogue of Akashic olfactory records. The accomplice phoned me at 9 a.m., yammering on about the Scissor Man Awards. Troilus says I've imbued our bedsheets with permanent acrid firework smells, and she sends her thanks to Bill's Blanks. I was hoarse, so he did most of the talking. At one point, about an hour in, his English became unrecognisable to me. Gobbledygook. Glossolalia. And I never noticed it before, but the accomplice and I have exactly the same nose. Mine is actually a bit bigger. And he spoke in tongues. I closely examined our faces in a black and white press photo, making the rounds. I'm not even going to describe what I witnessed deep within the innards of the Hammersmith backstage shite house between Sir George Salty and the two bald blokes that are Right Said Fred. I will say that it was more traumatic than stumbling over a sheep's carcass. A sheep's carcass? Beverly Craven probably didn't count sheep to get to sleep last night. I remember when Trevor Horn sang, "Video killed the radio star," thinking, who gives a shite about radio stars anyway? And here we are with Seal and his killer getting British Video of the Year. I mean, is Trevor Horn a genius or not? I mean, will Trevor Horn shoot his landlady or spend the rest of his life locked up in prison for murdering someone? I mean, where is Shadow Morton when you most need him? 1992. I died for you, Bon Appetit. I mean, it should have been I died for you, I mean, as in E-W-E. I'm writing about 1992 as if it were the past because of a future instruction from someone who seems something like myself. I'm willing to bet all the money we've made that a disease will exist in the future that will be notorious for eliminating one's sense of smell and thus taste. And it will understandably terrorise and reshape the world. I imagine a tasteless world served feasts, and I imagine removing everything from it that I once given in good faith. I imagine Madonna as a waitress in Kearsley adopting a cringe accent. I imagine Michael Jackson as Rimbo in Abyssinia. I imagine George Michael's Last Christmas being played earnestly, wistfully in the future on what was once radio, being received by a populace blissfully unaware of what a shite song it is. I imagine all music becoming elevator music, even Prince's music. Then I imagine Prince dying alone in an elevator. I had a dream that I met John Cage, and all we did was share an awkward silence. It was either a dream or something sprung from the internal dialogue of my insomnia. For the past year, I've probably managed around 4 hours of sleep a night. Yet I usually lay in bed for six in darkness, attempting to will myself back to sleep and slipping into a twilight realm where my internal voice is so loud and imaginative that I can't discern whether I'm dreaming or talking to myself. Sometimes I think that voice isn't mine at all. Perhaps it's the serpent or the disembodied spirit of Augustus Le Plongeon, demanding citation in the liner notes of my subconsciousness. I mean, if you've not appropriated Mayan culture, don't call yourself an artist. Speaking of Maya, this room smells like cow shite. I think I tracked it in here on the soles of my shoes. I want out of here. I want to board a small boat alone, like Bassian Adder, and sail blindly into the Atlantic. I've been reading a book about a place called North Sentinel, a remote island in the Bay of Bengal, inhabited by one of the last remaining uncontacted tribes on Earth. The Sentinelese, they're called. The Indian government doesn't allow anyone to land on North Sentinel because the Sentinelese attack and kill everyone who attempts a voyage there. There's something about such voluntary isolation that appeals to me. I do wish they had a shortwave radio station, though. Perhaps the accomplice and I could bribe a pilot. No doubt an Antoine de Saint-Exupéry type, and airdrop the equipment for such a thing. Just kidding. Not. I look like a folk singer in my passport photo. I realised this too late, and now I'm stuck with it. Granted, the only people who currently know this are me and probably 95 people who work at various security checkpoints and borderline crossings. But still, the opinions of those people matter, and I search for judgments and assumptions in their split-second expressions. The ego flinches. The flinching ego. There's a title. Diary. In summation, I'd like to report the following. 1. The later it is in New York City, the more likely you are to experience kindness. 2. A saxophone solo is the fanciest expression of the venereal. 3. A fiction writer is someone who has a fetish for people living real lives. 4. You can decide your way out of a panic attack. It's just a really difficult decision. 5. Something is wrung out of a child's wish for unconditional love by Father Time, and made into spit shine. 6. I had a dream that I ran into Joni Mitchell in the Garden of Eden, and she was naked, smoking a cigarette and wearing a fig leaf over her vagina. "My name's Adam," she said, "but you can call me Joni." 7. Masturbation will cure bronchitis for 15 minutes. 8. I have a lingering suspicion that these are indeed the good old days. 9. My fist looks like the heads of snakes. 10. The holiest among us are disproportionately cross-eyed. 11. In a perfect world, David Attenborough and Jane Goodall would have hooked up with John Denver playing on the radio. 12. Have you noticed that when you say the word insouciance slowly in a mirror, your mouth looks exactly like Paul McCartney's?
Below, a critique by Stuart Betts, MCMXCI, a critique. The Soviet Union disintegrated into several different countries and the Cold War came to an end. This is the year Scissorman's success peaked and then began to disintegrate. Once upon a time in the far, far east. It's so hot on the dance floor, let's have another cool drink. Could we go somewhere? Somewhere where we could be alone? We can go down to the harbour and watch the ships sail away to far-off lands. Right place, wrong time. This could have all taken flight in 1979. Bucky and myself envisaged a new way of doing pop. Lorry was great. Maybe we were too early. The drugs, culture and the cosmos were not quite right yet. Amnesia Book of Love, 1991, or maybe 92. A fan account. Don't know if you know about this, but I went to a rave in about 1991 and the special mystery guest was 808 State, but they came on in Scissorman robes to What Time Is Love? Eternity Magazine, 1994. Then, without any warning, they ripped off their masks and belted out their awesome masterpiece, Cubic. The crowd went through the roof. A fan account? That's not how I remember it. Firstly, there was no roof, as it was outside. Also, if I went through anything, it would have been the floor. I was thinking, fucking hell, not these cuts again, as he played every rave at the time. Operation Mindfuck / We Discordians Must All Stick Apart. What many of us forget is, this style of influence through disorientation is really an appropriation of the counterculture's techniques. This is what the Situationists were doing. So were the hippies and heads of the 1960s. The accomplice and myself began dabbling in this magic heavily in 1991, and once Scissorman, Scissorman and the Scissorman took on an unstoppable life of their own, we couldn't stop it if we had wanted to. We still can't. We just had to hold on tight and see where it took us. The discovery of America? In late 1991, on the 007 stage at Pinewood Studios, under the direction of Bill Butt, Scissorman made their widescreen video for America, What Time Is Love? For this, we used a fake Viking longboat, left over from the Terry Jones film, Eric the Viking. Glenn Hughes, the Staffordshire-born powerhouse vocalist who co-founded Trapeze and twice fronted Deep Purple, had reached a paradoxically low ebb for a rock singer. Addicted to alcohol and crack cocaine and ballooning in weight, the accomplice and I thought, perfect, this is our vocalist. As for the crew of this fake Viking longboat, Scissorman enlisted the services of a very real Viking reenactment society, and together they reenacted Leif Erikson's Discovery of America, which happened almost 500 years earlier than Christopher Columbus's so-called discovery. After the shoot, Glenn went home to Los Angeles, and on Christmas Day, suffered a massive heart attack. On leaving hospital, he checked into the Betty Ford Clinic. When he left rehab, he discovered he was in the UK top 20. He said, "I'd love to say that Bill and the accomplice got me off drugs, but the truth is, they didn't. It was nothing to do with them." The first offshore wind farms? When the 11 turbines of the world's first offshore wind farm, Vindeby in Denmark, were commissioned by Ørsted in 1991, not many believed that it was practical or even possible to operate wind turbines at sea. An author said, Blake and Scissorman have a lot in common, a fundamental concept from Robert Anton Wilson and the Discordian mythos that Scissorman adopted was an understanding of reality tunnels, how our minds construct a limited mental model of the world outside our skull, which we then confuse with reality itself. The key lesson here is that it is important not to believe your own model or belief system, or to put it simply, to not fall for your own belief system. This is also a Blakean idea. Blake personified the act of mentally creating a world and then mistakenly believing that the limits of this world were all there is, with a character he called Urizen. Urizen is rational and insecure and desperate to believe his own belief system. He is blind to how limited his mental abstractions are, and he cannot see anything beyond them. Like all of Blake's characters, he exists in all of us. He is useful, and we need him, but we also need to recognize how limited he is. We are the Black Room / Industrial Grey. While we were doing the White Room album, we went into another part of the studio for dark relief. We started recording some stuff in a different style. The accomplice said, "There is no structure to it, just noise. It's horrible. It's definitely not a chart-bound sound." We went to this rave and the sound system was broken. All you could hear was this kind of screeching top end and a really low bass drum. And we thought, wow, this is what the kids are into. The lyrics to "It's Grim Up North" lists towns and cities in the north of England, set to a pounding industrial techno beat and percussion reminiscent of steam whistles. The 1991 version segues into an orchestral instrumental of the hymn Jerusalem. Wiley Wah had rocked the clubs a year earlier, but once re-recorded with different vocals, Scissorman hit the UK top 10. Build a fire? Info sheet 13 stated the rights of Moo to make the questions we get asked and are unable to answer redundant. The four handmaids of evil, what, where, when and why, have been very busy. Their seduction techniques near perfect. Scissorman, with regular feet of clay, have weakened at times and have pretended sick to answer the unanswerable. They too have tried to understand instead of accepting the unfocusable, beautiful truth of the mystery that lies at the heart of pop's passing moments.
A troubled dream. Mental health, pronouns, and teeth envy by Stephen Nichols. I am Bill's bad dream. But if you'll forgive me, I think that's enough about Bill. If all has gone to plan, this book is full of his stories. His story. And what I am saying applies equally to him as you. Words dance around, changing meaning with time, and fashion, and politics. But some things are constant. I am constant. Universal. Egalitarian too, as it happens. Not to mention unique. Which, considering my propensity for returning to the scene of the crime, returning you to the scene of the crime, is somewhat ironic. You may dream the same dream more than once, but there's usually a little extra thrown in. And no matter what you tell each other, your dreams are never exactly the same as anyone else's. I am alone when I'm not with you, but I manage to get around all of you when you need me. You are all special to me. You all know me. I sleep with all of you, without prejudice or favour. We share a bed even when you sleep alone. And I never seek consent, yet I am there at your call. The number station of your subconscious is broadcasting. I'm not sure I have a designated gender, and despite my bad press, I bear none of you, my sweet sleeping companions, any ill will. My actions are entirely without malice. I don't seek you out, you call on me. Want me, even if you don't know it. Of course, I do my best work in the subconscious, so it's my nature to move in symbols, glyphs and ciphers, codes, puzzles and conundrums, all wrapped in and warped by the mysterious chemicals of your mind. Subliminal signals that all is not right. Maybe not obviously scary. Maybe a blurred, half-remembered something that leaves you uncomfortable for the day. You may not even remember my visit, but something somewhere may have altered in your perception of yourself or the world. Your waking lives are the distraction. I am the bullet points of reality. The things you hide from, distracted by sex and drugs, living to work, looking for love, getting over love, screen time, box set binges, and everything else you use to avoid the reality. Now, it's important to understand that I have no graduating scale of fearsome content that adjusts to the transgressions of your waking hours. There is no logic in the amount of psychic pain things can cause, nor the way I will imprint them on your dreams. There are so many ways in for me. The fact that you're aging fast, and it shows, you're confused about your gender or sexuality or both, body shame, abuse, mistreatment, loneliness, love, depression, anxiety, moral confusion, old people sitting wrapped in blankets because they can't afford to put the heating on. The world has reached an environmental tipping point. Self-hate, hate-hate. Big things like the Great Game, where the powerful states are planting invisible footprints in Africa, South America, the Arctic, mistreating Indigenous people and stripping the land to mine the metals that make your tech work. Smaller things, your crooked nose, then there's your porn addiction, massive body image issue and eating disorders, breathing poisonous air and gleefully buying from the factories that pump it out, adding vodka into the morning coffee, children dying, people killing children, children killing children, abstract acceptance that we all die, sometimes slowly and painfully, unfulfilled and resenting the time you wasted, and of course, just plain old nameless fear. The list is endless, and sometimes, maybe you can hide from it in the busy, noisy daylight. Sometimes, I'm the only person in the world you can share it with. You may already know this. I don't blame you. Feel free to obsess over your likes and follows, get road rage, carry a knife or a gun, be violent, have filthy, unsafe sex, take lots of drugs, be angry and act superior if you must, cry and be nostalgic, obsess over a sci-fi franchise or sport team and enjoy it all when you can, because sometimes the world needs a filter, a barrier. Reality is often fucking awful, but you can't just pile all those distracting things on top and forget the truth. Even without me, it would leak out. This is why I'm necessary. Because I am here to remind you before you implode. And it's important to keep a little space in your soul for reality. Otherwise, all this other bullshit becomes your reality. And no matter how fucked the real world is, the one you hide in is much eventually worse. Whoever else you think you can convince your life is great, part of you always knows. If you stop and think about it, you know I'm right. so you probably do whatever you can to avoid stopping and thinking. I tried to keep it simple. Come at you obliquely. Pick out childhood memories and show you the stains. There are the standard repetitive ones. Losing teeth, being chased, embarrassing events, falling, you know the type. It's not complicated. It's just a nudge. I'm not here to hurt you. I need you. We need each other. When the last human sits atop a hill and looks out over the scorched earth and stops breathing, I will end too. I'm just a pressure valve that releases the contradictory jumble of often self-imposed and unnecessary bleakness that haunts you. I'm not here to cause you pain or fear. I may be trying to give you an alternative perspective outside your secret world of doubt and fear. A hint that maybe some of it is just all in your head. Some of it is beyond your control. And some things are worth a little push towards considering addressing it in the real world. I can't change that world. Maybe I can just help you face up to it and reevaluate things a little. I'm jumbled and confusing and scary sometimes. Maybe I can be troubling. But all I really want to do in my own twisted and tricky way is tweak your thoughts towards the light. I'm only here for you.